Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is the Dale and Keith Show.
I mean, the pressure is on Boston. You're not that good on the road right now. You go back to Cleveland for a closeout game, I don't see it happening. I say that the Celtics have to win in six.
Dale Arnold and Rich Keefe.
I don't think Keefe's keys would play well on TV.
Why not? You can actually see my keys.
Exactly.
Even better.
No, exactly. We would have to see you.
On the WEEI Sports Radio Network.
5, 4, 3, 2.
Tomasi's got a lot to live up to because apparently one appearance by Kyle Draper just sends everybody over the edge.
Everybody in a real tizzy. I didn't realize he was insulting my looks there. That's kind of hurtful.
It seemed pretty clear to me that's what he was doing.
Yeah, no, I know, but hearing it again hurts even more. You know, I just was not ready to start the show.
It didn't hurt that much yesterday.
No, yesterday I kind of blacked out and was just screaming, but now hearing it again, that is pretty hurtful, Kyle, so...
Hopefully. Whatever standard he set, I'm going to fall woefully short.
Yeah,
well, thanks, John.
Probably likely, but thank you for always checking in. John Tomasi is here with us. We are at West End Johnny's, 138 Portland Street, just literally a block away from the Garden, which will be jumping tonight. Keith will be in the house.
I can't wait. It is going to be rocking. I'm very excited to go. I decided not to bring my D. Brown jersey. I'm going to not go as a big-time fan, but I'm going to be rooting. I'm going to be rooting in the old
press box. You actually have a D. Brown jersey, don't you?
Yeah, of course I do. Why wouldn't I? Why wouldn't anybody?
And you don't wear it with a T-shirt under it either, right?
No, at this point, it is much too tight to wear anything underneath that. So, no, it is just the standard D. Brown jersey.
Do you pump the shoes?
I had the pumps. I had the pumps. Yeah, why not? Playing basketball in the early 90s? How do you not have the pumps?
Do you ever try to the blindfolded layup? I'm assuming you'd have to be a layup.
Oh, yeah. No, there was a lot of injuries there. That was a problem.
a lot of Nerf baskets.
Let me try to no-look dunk here on the Nerf hoop.
Well, Paul Pierce basically says the Celtics have to win the next two or they're not winning. That's Paul Pierce saying that,
well,
for crying out loud.
So I guess the question would be, all right, so first of all, I think we all look at this as they have to win game five. So then do you say, do they have a better chance of winning on the road, something they've only done once in the postseason, or a better chance of winning a game seven against LeBron?
Game seven.
Like, you think so?
Yeah, I mean, because they're not going to win in Cleveland.
But LeBron's going to play insane.
Pierce says LeBron will not lose a game seven.
One game away from the finals.
But he thinks he will lose game six at home. I find that unlikely.
Well,
I think the Celtics' best path to victory is 5-7.
Home.
Yeah,
just
win
all
two
the home
games.
I mean, you can't argue with the numbers right now. 9-0 at home.
All anybody ever does is win at home.
So that checks out. I just think you're going to get a next-level LeBron in game seven, although I guess the question would be, does that matter? Like, does he need a couple of other teammates? I think they proved that out in the first two games. Especially game two. Game one, LeBron also played poorly, so that was all Celtics. But if Smith or Korver's knocking down threes, then that makes the Cavs look a whole lot different.
Yeah, and we've also got the weird thing now where Ty Lue seems to have sort of taken over the coaching lead from Brad Stevens in terms of...
I don't know about that.
Well, hold on. The last two games, though, you look at the way they've played. Like, they have gotten LeBron isolated on Terry Rozier whenever they wanted. It's like,
or it's
you
LeBron
switch,
gotten himself isolated.
You switch, we're going to that right away. And we asked Rozier about it after the game four, and he said they've changed the way they're aligning the other players on the floor now. So when we get that switch, we can't scramble out of it and, you know, have Horford jump in there or Jaylen Brown or whoever. They're putting somebody under the basket. That's why Cleveland's getting so many layups off of LeBron.
What do you make of Stevens' point about that? Because when I was watching game four, I thought the same thing. I'm like, every time it goes to Rozier switches on them, they get an easy 2 points. But he's alluded both in the post game and some of the interviews he's done since that – sometimes when you're watching the game, it looks worse than it is. And when you go and look at the stats, I think it was, 4 for 4? I think it was 8 points on Terry Rozier, which at 8 out of 44. Like, he was scoring on anybody.
However,
so,
what did he set up off of those as well? How many layups did they get off of those?
Oh, like, they were easy buckets. No, I don't doubt it. I mean, I'm
not even talking about his, though. Like, LeBron scored 4. How about everybody else? So the point is, Brad Stevens' point is you have to defend the three-point line. You have to defend everybody else. We'll sacrifice those few possessions in order to do that on the rest. Okay, but now they're getting layups as well. So you got to account for at least two out of those three things, right? And so how do you do it?
You can't. You just can't switch Rozier onto LeBron. Like, you just can't do it. And I don't know if that means you have to bench Terry Rozier because at times he's one of your offensive
guys. You only have two point guards.
You don't have a lot of options. But I think maybe their best lineup could be Smart, Brown, Tatum, Morris, and Horford. Or if they're going really big, maybe it's Horford and Baines. That might be your best lineup because then anything that you're switching with, if you still want to switch, if you're not fighting through screens, then maybe you could switch with everybody. And he can't just post up Baines or Horford. He also, Smart's going to make it a little bit tougher for him. He can obviously shoot over Smart, but he's going to make it a little bit tougher for him. And then you got, you know, either Morris or you have Brown and Tatum. Like, that's just, those are better matchups than Rozier. Rozier was just an easy bucket.
So this comes back to the whole coaching thing then. What's Brad Stevens going to do to counter Ty Lue, which we weren't saying 4 days ago?
No, we were not.
What can he do to just counter the coaching advantage?
Ty Lue doesn't even know what happens in the game. He didn't even know what happened after the game. Like, what about the third quarter? I can't remember that. I can't. No, we're not.
When you're watching the game, can you remember everything?
I'm not the head coach of the team. LeBron can.
No, I think he was reading it.
But also, this was game four of the conference finals. The game was had just finished. You had a huge momentum swing there in that point of the late third quarter, and he's like, "I don't even know. I don't even know what you're talking about."
How do you forget Kyle Korver outracing three Celtics?
How often does that happen?
That's never going to happen again.
All season or in his career for Korver.
Gave Jeff Van Gundy goosebumps.
Jeff Van Gundy didn't forget that.
He will remember
Jeff Van Gundy
it forever.
Will never forget that. And Ty Lue's like, "Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about." So I still have a hard time thinking that guy is out coaching Brad Stevens.
So is it just as simple as they're home, they'll win?
I mean, it
can't be quite that simple, but that's going
to
help.
But it feels that way, doesn't it?
It seems like it throughout the playoffs it has been. And then when you kind of go to the next layer there, it's just all the guys that are playing so much better. You know, you get like Terry Rozier is much different. Al Horford's another guy, which I was surprised by the splits, John. When they showed him before game four, the home-road splits, you're like, yeah, obviously Terry Rozier is a little bit different. Jaylen Brown's a little bit different. Al Horford had as significant a gap from how good he is at home to the road, and I thought the most veteran player.
Oh, no, here we
go. I'm not getting into an Al Horford thing. It's not what
I bet Lou hasn't left the building. You want to go?
Yeah, Lou, get back on
Can
here.
You yell down the
Lou,
hallway,
get
see if Lou can come back on?
But wouldn't you think the veteran players would be the ones that their game would travel a little bit more? They wouldn't be freaked out by the road crowds or things like that, and he's been a guy that's been much, much different. And so you're not going to have to deal with that again until game six, but you should get a pretty good – like his best performances – have all been at home, whether it's Milwaukee or Philly or Cleveland.
Yeah, the only thing with Horford to me is, like, he needs other people to set him up. We see him bring the ball up, and you convince yourself that, oh, he's running the offense. He can run things for himself. That's not really how his game works.
No.
He's got to get in the post when he has the right matchup, and you got to get him the ball, which they were awful at in Game 3. They were a little better in Game 4. Yeah. And Tristan Thompson is a tougher matchup for him. You know, first two games, for whatever reason, the great Ty Lue decided that his best Al Horford defender would not defend Al Horford. So that's made a difference as well. I just think a couple of Celtics alluded to this after the game, Jaylen Brown in particular, about calls. And the last thing you want to do is whine about refs, because when you lose a game by 30 and then you lose another game where you were down 18 after one and you were down double digits pretty much all game, it's not the ref's fault. However, he does have a point about how they let the style of play go. Like the Phillies, the Cavs are much rougher, much more physical with Tatum, Brown on the perimeter in Cleveland than they are in Boston. That could make a difference.
So if I screw up the pronunciation, I apologize, but Shams Charania, is that how you say his last name?
I just call him Shams. He's an NBA insider.
Yes, he is an NBA insider for Yahoo.
Yes.
He has just posted the 2018 NBA all-defensive teams, first and second all-defensive teams.
Ooh, okay.
First team, Rudy Gobert, Anthony Davis, Victor Oladipo, Drew Holiday, Robert Covington.
Okay.
Second team, Joel Embiid, Draymond Green, DeJounte Murray. Is that how you say his
DeJounte.
First name? DeJounte.
Yeah.
Jimmy Butler, Al Horford.
There you go.
All right.
Al Horford, All-NBA second team.
No LeBron.
No LeBron on there. Well, when he tries, he's first team. But when he doesn't try, he's not going to be voted on there.
So Al Horford, a second team all-defensive.
I think that sounds about right because the Celtics should have somebody represent.
By the way, even as we speak right now, Kyle Draper's having a new T-shirt made.
Yeah, second team all defense. I don't know if you're going to sell of that. But
big Al Horford head with stars coming out of it.
Five stars, obviously. But they needed to have somebody represented. They're one of the best defensive teams in the league. you know, Marcus Smart maybe missed too many games, because I would say he is all NBA defensive talent. Like, he's one of the guys you would consider as a great defensive player. So, but no, Al Horford's deserving of that.
And Baines would be the other guy, but he probably doesn't quite play enough, and he doesn't do it in a flashy way.
But also, and with Horford too, I mean, that a lot of people say, like, oh, he's, you know, the best defensive player in the league. It's like, okay, well, there's clearly guys better than him. Like, he's very good, and you're glad that he's on your team, but you saw some of the big men that are ahead of him, and that's fine. Like, he's not going to be defensive player.
Yeah, he's a team defender. I mean, he's a great team defender on the best team defense in basketball.
Right.
I was actually it was on First Take this morning. Not the other show.
Oh, my God. You just
First Take.
Back and read ping pong?
Well, no,
two?
It was on. And I actually heard them talking about how, in a way, this was their words, not mine, Kyrie Irving doesn't really like the Celtics doing this well without him. You know, because then it's how important is he? And
yeah, I think he's rooting for the Celtics, right? Because
I'd like to think against the Cavaliers that he might be.
I was going to say, especially against the Cavaliers. But I would also admit, if they win the whole thing, like hypothetically, best case scenario, the Celtics win the whole thing, he's not going to celebrate the way he would have had he been on the team. That's just
well,
human
they used
nature.
The, like, they used the Carson Wentz example.
Yeah.
Guy who was probably going to be the MVP in the NFL until he got hurt. You know, then his backup comes in and wins the Super Bowl.
He's not wearing that ring around, right? Just like Drew Bledsoe. Bledsoe was a part of that team, the first Super Bowl team, but he's not wearing the ring being like, I'm a Super Bowl
team. Well, at least he played the AFC Championship.
He actually has more right than Wentz.
But he also knew he was legitimately being replaced forever.
Yeah, no, that's true.
You know, which Kyrie Irving is not.
No, but just a part of it, especially if you're Kyrie Irving and you hit one of the biggest shots, or maybe the biggest shot in Cleveland Cavalier franchise history. You're a big part of a title team. You're going to celebrate that one more than watching your guys. Like, I'm sure he wants them to win, but it is obviously different
playing
and not.
Yeah, but you know what? He knows that even if they somehow get to the finals, which is looking kind of probably sketchy at this point, they're going to get crushed. So he can be like, yay, we made it. Now I'm going to come back and I'll show you how to win it.
But it does sort of set the bar again for when he returns, right? Now all of a sudden there's going to be, and this is a conversation for once the season's over, but the return of Irving and Hayward, all right, they've already proven they can make it to a sixth game at worst in the conference finals without those guys. So now the bar is going to be raised, and they're going to have to at least get to the NBA finals next year.
I've never understood this. The entire playoff run, I've never understood the disparity between home and road. It's now a given. I'm not arguing against it. It's so obvious, but I don't understand why.
Although Houston, Golden State, they've each taken one on the road.
By the way,
so far last series.
Who saw that coming last night?
No, I did not. They lose by 41 points, then they come back and win on the road.
That series was all setting up to be over.
Good luck predicting game five in that series. Yeah, everybody was saying sweep after the first game, and, you know, give Houston a ton of credit. They looked great last night.
And Steph misses a shot to win.
Yeah.
Or to tie, not to win.
Yeah, Curry's missing shots. Klay Thompson down the stretch. Like, they were out of sorts.
They've had rough playoffs before, though.
They have.
You know, that's.
But so is Harden. So you're like, something has to give here. Like, somebody has to play
Chris
well.
Chris Paul never gets out of the second round.
Yeah.
So but all of these guys.
The NBA is thrilled. Even though there's been a lot of blowouts in that series, they know now that both of their conference finals are going at least six. And that's a lot different. The Warriors last year lost one playoff game, and they've already lost two to Houston. So it's a lot different. The league can make more money. They're going to have more games on TV, more home gates, and everything else.
You always wonder about desire and how much it factors in. You would think that the Houston Rockets would have a much greater desire than the Golden State Warriors. The Warriors have won. They've been there. I mean, you got Chris Paul. You got James Harden. They got nothing on the mantle other than individual awards.
Right.
You know, the same thing is being said in the Stanley Cup playoffs, where you got Washington against Tampa. Tampa's won a Stanley Cup. Washington doesn't do anything. Alexander Ovechkin has got to feel like he would kill
this
for the opportunity.
Yeah, this is the time.
How much does this desire factor into a team winning and losing?
Yeah, I think it's got to set in, because on the one hand, Golden State, they have they're chasing history. Like, they're sort of competing against other dynasties because they're already looked at as one of the best teams of all time. Last year, they certainly were. 2 years ago, they were the best team probably ever to not win it. The year before that, they won the whole thing. So they're just chasing multiple titles, and I think that should be motivating enough. But you're right, Chris Paul, James Harden, they've both had really good, like, Hall of Fame careers. They have. That's also anybody gets into the Basketball Hall of Fame. But either way, they've had Hall of Fame careers, and they just haven't, you know, Harden's been to the finals once and lost as, like, the sixth man, and Paul's never been there. In fact, this is his first conference finals trip. So those guys have to have a little bit more want, but that shouldn't decide.
I mean, everybody wants to
win. You're in the playoffs, for God's sake.
But if you're the Golden State Warriors, you got a little, you know, less push behind you, and they're the more talented team by far.
But also, if you're the Warriors, even if you say, like, hey, every game, the next game is the most important game ever, when you're up 2-1 in a series and you had just won by 41 points, I don't know how you can't think that, you know, you're going to win that series. Like, that has to be in the back of your mind. They're like, all right, we got two more wins.
And when Kevin Durant is doing whatever he wants every game, you just say, okay, you guys have Harden. We have Curry. We have Klay Thompson. We have Kevin Durant.
Yes.
We have, like, eight different people who can beat you.
How do they lose?
How?
And they've lost twice already in the series.
Curry's banged up, so that makes a difference.
But he still is looking.
He does, but he's not shooting, like, a great percentage. And so he's not 100%. They had no Andre Iguodala last night, who's their fifth best player. And Houston's good. I mean, you heard Steve Kerr after the game. He's like, they won 65 games. He's like, and then people are making it out to be like, oh, my God, like, what an upset. It's like, they have two of the 15 best players in the league, and there are other guys who aren't household names by any means, but they're pretty good. Like, P.J. Tucker's had a good postseason. Clint Capella's a good player. He's a double-double guy. Eric Gordon can score off the bench. So they have a good team.
We will, at the bottom of the hour, talk to Alex Cora, the manager of the Boston Red Sox. I bring to mind the Bradfo show.
Oh, how could you? Nice. How could you not be thinking
the
about
the Rob
Bradfo
Bradford
show?
Podcast?
Correct.
In which he spoke to Mookie Betts, and Mookie Betts talked about, you know, he may never have a season as good as the one he had, you know, a couple of years ago. He may never.
He might be on his way.
Reach those kind of numbers. He's right. He may not be
Bradfo
as good as that.
Show.
He might be a lot better than that.
It might be better. Yeah, I mean, he's putting up just an insane season right now.
Ooh.
I mean, it's like you can have the conversation with a straight face. Is he the best player in baseball?
Absolutely can.
Right? Like, that's not.
And I know how good Mike Trout is, and I understand
that's probably,
all that.
That's probably still the answer. But, like, he's on that short list. You know, it's Trout, it's Harper, it's Betts, maybe sprinkling a couple of other guys. I don't know how you'd want to weigh in pitchers or anything. But if you were building a team, he's one of the first picks.
Yeah, and if he were batting third or fourth instead of leadoff, he'd be triple crown. He'd be leading all the triple
crown. Except he might not be hitting the same way. I mean, that's the thing.
And 370's 370
no, but,
for him.
But Cora brought up the point. He spoke to Mookie
in
like January.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he told Mookie, you're going to bat leadoff, and I want you to be more aggressive. And Mookie's eyes kind of lit up, and he said, so you want me to bat leadoff, and you want me to swing more?
Yeah.
He might not be the same hitter
that's
if
true.
He's hitting third or fourth.
My point is just that
right.
he
doesn't
would be
have
leading
the
league and everything
right.
only because of where he's in
or
the
or if you know, the number 9 and the 8-9 guys weren't hitting below 200, he might also have more RBIs. But that's another thing.
Hey, two big hits for Jackie Bradley Jr.
You know what?
Last
I think
night.
He's officially out of it.
I don't.
Think he's, no, you don't think
don't
he's
know.
Out of it? I feel
don't.
Fine. He's the guy
I
now
don't.
Going forward. But Pedroia's on his way back, and that's going to strengthen the bottom of the lineup. So, I mean, Betts, he might still end the year. Like, he's still on pace for a pretty big number for RBI. Like, he won't lead the league, like you said, John, but batting average and home runs, I mean, he's got to compete with J.D. Martinez for both of those as well. I mean, the kind of season that he's having.
Yeah, I mean, he's still got 35 RBIs in 44
right.
games, which
right.
is amazing
pretty
when
good.
You consider the two guys in front of him are hitting, like, mm-hmm. 170 and 190. So he's getting it done.
But, yeah, he's been awesome. I
mean, the Red Sox have never in their history had two guys with 15 or more home runs at this point of the season.
Which is amazing when you think
when you
like,
think about Manny and David Ortiz.
I know,
Jim Rice and Yaz or Fred Lynn or back to those 50s teams with Ted Williams, the 1950 team that scored 1,000 runs. Right,
Brunansky and Quintana. Like all guys,
yeah, definitely.
You just,
definitely.
Just thought somebody
right to my mind.
You would have had somebody get there. But, yeah, you would think that any kind of power stat for a duo or Manny and Ortiz would have had all of those. And now you got Mookie Betts, who against your leadoff hitter. He and your cleanup guy have that. It's pretty impressive.
So what's the situation with Martinez? Does he really think that he's not getting the attention that he deserves? Like,
there's another Bradfo special.
I know.
Yeah,
Bradfo's been all over this stuff.
And I've been trying to figure out exactly what he's getting.
Oh, I think you know exactly what he's getting at. This offseason, nobody wanted me. I had to settle for $100 million. It's all relative.
No,
when
I
am one of the best players in baseball, I know that. My peers know that. The public at large doesn't know that, and the industry as a whole didn't respect me the way that they should have. I should have been paid a lot more. I think that's what it's coming
down
to.
Who's the most upset that they didn't spend money on Martinez, I wonder?
Like, yeah, that's a great question.
You know, there's got to be a team out there being like, oh, my God. Like, had we known that he was definitely going to do this?
Well, even like the Diamondbacks, you know.
Just bringing him back, right.
Bringing him back.
Goldschmidt's terrible, by the way. Not to turn this into a whole baseball show, but Goldschmidt has been awful all seasons. He could probably use Martinez in his lineup.
And that's probably not going to last. But still,
no.
If you're the D-backs and you say you could have had this guy for $20 million a year, like that's pretty low rate. That's a cut rate for a top-of-the-league slugger like we got here.
The Red Sox didn't seem to be all that fired up about signing him.
No.
It took forever to get him in here.
And they're like, we offered you 105. Go find 106. And if you do, you know, good luck.
And a lot of people are like, it's not Stanton. Like, yeah, I guess you're better off in a bizarre turn of events. So, yeah, he's been – quietly one of the best players. If Mookie Betts is the AL MVP right now, Martinez is probably in the top five.
Yeah, and only because of defense. Well, not only, but yeah. Defense is what really puts
Separates
Mookie over
those
the
guys,
top.
Yeah.
But offensively, they're about as close as you can get.
We'll get more into baseball at the bottom of the hour with Alex Cora. Just to touch briefly on the Patriots, other sources are now confirming what we reported yesterday, that Tom Brady was not at TB12 this week. He was not there working out. He's not there today. He won't be there tomorrow. And frankly, if the other sources had been right, it would have been an awful look. If his team is down on the field doing 7-on-7, 11-on-11, and he's up, you know, at TB12 working out, it would have been a horrible look, but it also wasn't true.
But we've had that look already, right?
No, it's totally different, John, because what they're doing is stuff that he doesn't do, the weightlifting, that stuff. He's on a totally separate program.
I get that.
When you're throwing the football to wide receivers and running backs, if you're not down there doing it, but you're up at TB12, that's a horrible look.
I'm going to say it's still a bad look to have your team working out in one place. When he was working out in California because he wanted to be with his kid, everyone understood that. When your team is working out and you're half a mile away doing your own thing, that is a terrible look as well.
I disagree with you because he's on such a different program than they are. He doesn't do the things they do. Now, you can argue about whether or not he should be on a separate program, but I think that the results have kind of taken that argument away from everybody.
Yeah,
he doesn't do what the strength and conditioning staff want.
That Belichick's results of having everyone on the same page and having Tom, you know, serve as the whipping boy or whatever, that the fact that Tom was always willing to be just one of 52 and not put himself above that, I think that's important too, and that's what's missing right now.
Yeah, the straight-up team first, football's the most important thing, that's out the window.
Yeah.
Like, that's not there. But him not being up the stairs is at least a better look, Dale. I agree with you on that. Like, if he's out of the country doing something else. And Robert Kraft, even today,
said he's been talking to him.
Said he's going to be at mandatory minicamp next month. And he mentioned not just family, but also business stuff. Then, like, all the things that Tom Brady is doing. And the NFL season is not September to February. You know, we're talking about May, right? Guys working out, or April they're working out. So if he is going to take time away to do some of that stuff, it makes sense that it's during the voluntary portion.
We will talk to the manager of the Boston Red Sox, Alex Cora, coming up next. The Celtics, of course, take on the Cleveland Cavaliers, Game 5 tonight. We are live here at West End Johnny's with Budweiser till 6 p.m., getting you ready for the game. If you're headed to the game or if you're in the area, come on down, hang out, grab a cold Budweiser. We'll be here until 6 o'clock. We'll talk to Alex Cora coming up next, Sports Radio WEEI. Time now for us to talk to the manager of the Boston Red Sox, Alex Cora. Alex is brought to you by Arbella Insurance, your New England Honda dealers, and Cumberland Farms, the official coffee of the Red Sox Radio Network. Alex joins us now from Tampa, where the Red Sox are playing the Rays. Hey, Alex, how are you?
I'm great. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great, thank you. We were just having this talk about your player, Mookie Betts, and I know you're probably a little bit biased when we ask you this. Is he now in the conversation of being one of the best players in baseball?
He is. What he brings to the table on a daily basis, not only offensively, running the bases, defensively, he stops the running game. He does a lot of things. I mean, he's a 5-2 player. And there's a few of them in the big leagues, and right now he's having probably the best season of an offensive player this season. Obviously, he's doing an outstanding job hitting for average, hitting the ball out of the ballpark, stealing bases. He's been amazing.
You talked about the conversation you had with him in January when you told him he was going to bat leadoff and you wanted him to be more aggressive at the plate. Do you think that he could have this kind of year if he was hitting in another spot in the lineup, or is that just because of the position you've put him in?
I don't know. I can't answer you that question, but approach-wise, he's a lot different than last year. He was a very passive hitter, and it's not like he's swinging at the first pitch all the time, but there's intent in every pitch, and he's so disciplined. He stays away from bad pitches, but he's ready to hit from the get-go. And that's something that I didn't see last year. Actually, we took advantage of that situation with him and other guys just to get ahead in the first two at-bats and then be careful with the first pitch in the third one because it was like a predetermined swing in the third at-bat. And, we did a good job with the Houston Astros against him. So I don't know. I don't know if he'll have the same production hidden somewhere else, but we're happy with him leading off and setting up the tempo.
Seems like the new approach has been benefiting a lot of the players on the team. One guy who's off to a slow start is Jackie Bradley Jr. Did have two hits last night, but still hitting under 180. Have you seen anything different in his at-bats recently compared to earlier in the season?
Yeah, less movement, more athletic, and less movement in the sense that his head is staying still. But he's in a better athletic position. I don't know if you guys watched the game yesterday. There was no leg kick. You know, it seems like he was on time. The first one, Cron didn't make the play. He got the base hit, but then the second hit, he stayed up the middle, hands inside the ball, and hit it back to the middle. And then the ground ball hit to second base. It was well stroked too. And you know, he walked Sunday at home. Yesterday on a 3-2 count, it was 50-50 pitch, actually borderline up and away, and the call went against him. But it seems like he's seen the ball a little bit better in the last few days. So you know, he'll be out there tonight, and hopefully he can keep improving.
Alex, he has options. How much thought, if any, did you give to sending him down to try to figure things out at Pawtucket?
No, I mean, we always talk about rosters and our roster and all the situations that can come up. But, you know, we're trusting this guy to go out there and perform every day. We've been working with him on a daily basis. Actually, they're probably upset at me because I'm doing the interview and they're missing the best BP in the world. That is mine at 2:30. But they're hitting early. They're doing the thing. He's working, and it seems like he's making strides.
What makes your BP so great?
It's so tough that then at 7:05, when you face the big leaguers, it's actually a tick down of my stuff. So it's actually better for them.
Hey, last night, Craig Kimbrell had kind of a rough go of it in the ninth inning. Anything in particular, do you think, or just one of those nights?
Just one of those nights. The at-bat by Sucre, that was a great at-bat. 3-2, able to... not swing sliders down and away and fouled off a few pitches, and then he got that base hit to left field. Miller, it seems like for everything I heard, Miller, he's the Babe Ruth of his Babe Ruth against the Red Sox the last few years. I mean, it seems like he always gets at bats against us, and he's done it this year. He gets a fastball up in the zone, he hits a double. Then doesn't give in to the next hitter and makes a few good pitches to Smith, and he gets out of it. But I think he, you know, velocity was okay, location was okay, so no concerns with him.
Now, last week we talked about Carson Smith with you and his injury, and he sort of alluded to maybe overuse being a part of why he was hurt. And you had then said, after our interview, speaking to the rest of the media pregame, that you know, you were going to have a conversation with Carson Smith. Have you had that conversation yet?
We did actually, and we talk about the whole thing, and you know, like I told him, I'm pulling for him. I want him. Hopefully, everything goes, in a positive way, and he can come back sooner rather than later. You know, I expressed my feelings. He did. He expressed his, and you know, we turned the page.
Did he express to you that he felt that he was being used too much and that was a part of it, or was that?
No. I'm not going to tell you what goes on in that office, but like I said, we turned the page, man. You know, he's a good kid, and he explained me why he, you know, what he said, and I told him where I was coming from, so we left it at that, and you know, he's part of the organization, he's part of this team, and I know he's pulling for us.
Alex, one of your former teammates, Dustin Pedroia, is due back soon. Do you have an idea of how you're going to use him and how you're going to fit him on the roster?
Yeah, I got a pretty good idea. one thing for sure, we just got to make sure he plays tonight. I don't know how the weather is over there, but that's the most important thing right now. You know, he didn't play yesterday. He didn't play on Monday. The plan is for him to play today, and I think they have one of those special days tomorrow in Pawtucket that they play at 11 a.m. So we'll see how he reacts tonight. But, yeah, I do have a pretty good idea. I think Dustin is going to help us offensively, as you guys know. And defensively, he's going to, you know, he's one of the best defensive second basemen in the big league. So we just got to make sure we keep him healthy throughout the season. It's not that I'm you know, he's going to get a lot of off days, but we got to keep him fresh. Everybody saw what happened last year where he was. Obviously, he was hurt. But then towards the end of the season, you know, he wasn't performing, and we want a good Dustin Pedroia. So I got to make sure we keep him fresh and ready to go.
We can tell, obviously, Nunez has had issues with his knee since last year, and he's been playing through them. Would the DL for him be a possibility as you try to make room for Pedroia on the roster?
Nunez is healthy. He's healthy. So, you know, the last time, you know, every day I check with him, and actually he, you know, the work he's putting in, not only offensively but defensively before games, tells you that he is. So, you know, he's a part of the roster. He's going to help us to be better. He knows the situations. He knows what's coming, and he knows how we're going to use him. So I do feel that moving him around, not only defensively but in the lineup, is going to help us out, and I know he's going to contribute.
Tonight's starting pitcher, David Price, is coming off, I think, the best game he's ever thrown in a Red Sox uniform in his last start. What did you see from Price in his last appearance that made him so effective?
Although he used his fastball a lot, he was changing speeds with it. He was using different locations with it. As you guys know, this game, the way pitchers are attacking hitters, you know, that vertical attack, you know, using that fastball up in the zone, it works. And you can see David, you know, going inside against righties, then outside, going up and in, up and away, being able to use his changeup. But with him, it's all about control. Be precise, and that night he was outstanding.
Now, J.D. Martinez is off to a great start. He's got to be in the MVP mix here early in the season. He seems to be a better hitter when he's in the outfield compared to DH. Not that he's a bad DH by any means, but he seems to be a little bit more engaged potentially in the outfield. Is that something that he has talked to you about, trying to get some regular time in left field still?
I don't know. I think he won the player of the week being DH last week most of the game. So this guy, it doesn't matter with him. The thing is that he likes to play the outfield, but he understands where we at. You know, when he's DH, and the only negative thing is that whoever is throwing batting practice in the cage has to throw batting practice for 7 innings because the guy won't stop hitting. But besides that, there's no complaints. He's going to hit regardless. This guy, he prepares. He executes, and he wants to get better. So if he plays left field, right field, he's DH-ing, we know he's going to put a good at-bat anyways during the day.
Alex, big picture question for you, a little off topic. The NFL announced today their new rules about the anthem and how you have to stand for it and all that. And I'm curious what you think of the fact that none of this stuff has really found its way into baseball, either in terms of players being really socially active or in terms of protesting or anything like that. Why do you think baseball has sort of been different from other sports in this whole thing?
I don't know. I think there was a situation last year in Oakland, if I'm not mistaken. Maxwell, he expressed his feelings, and I mean, he did a good job, I think, talking to the players before the game and talking to Melvin, and they, you know, they felt okay with the situation. You know, I was last year, to be honest with you, during the playoffs, sometimes you wonder, you know, if somebody is going to, express their feelings during the anthem, but it didn't happen. You know, in our case, you know, we encourage our guys to go out there. As you guys seen it, you know, everybody's out there. But if somebody feels like they want to express their feelings, we're going to respect that. Obviously, we all address the situation, but like I said, we encourage them to go out there. I think it's very important, not only because of what it represents, but also what happens before the anthem and after the anthem in the dugout. I think it's very important to have the group together, and it means a lot to us.
Time now for the Cumberland Farms Question of the Week, brought to you by Cumberland Farms Farmhouse Blend Iced Coffee. Go to weei.com/manager to submit your question for us to ask Alex every Wednesday. Today's question comes from Megan Hoyo of West Springfield. She asks, with so many players turned managers, like yourself, are there any that you are in contact with to discuss the experience of the transition?
Yes, I stay in touch with AJ. We talk a lot. We talk like probably 3 times a week, AJ Hinch. I learned from him last year. Obviously, it's a different situation. Well, especially this year, you know, he's a world champ, so it's fun to be there. Obviously, the market is different, but at the end of the day, we have to manage our guys and put him in a position to be successful. And he did an outstanding job last year, so I talked to him a lot. You know, so
now that he's a world champ, does he still take your calls?
He does. He does. Yeah. He does. I can't wait to see him the next week, man. It's going to be a fun weekend. Get that ring and show it to the guys and catch up with all those guys.
Now, Alex, I know you said Jackie Bradley's in the lineup again. Any changes to it tonight?
No, we're going – oh, yeah, Christian is catching tonight. He's hitting ninth. So the rest are the same as yesterday.
Alex, we always appreciate the time. Good luck. We'll talk to you next week.
You guys take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Alex. That is Red Sox manager Alex Cora joining us from Tampa. We're broadcasting live from West End Johnny's, 138 Portland Street. Normally they open at 4, but because we're here today at 2, if you want to get a little head start on your pregame,
yes,
come on down. The doors are open, and we're just down the street from the Garden where the Celtics take on the Cavaliers. It's Dale and Keith. John Tomasi's in the house as well. Sports Radio, WEEI. (617) 779-7937 is the telephone number. We'll spend most of the afternoon talking about the Celtics and their huge playoff game tonight just down the street here at the Garden against the Cleveland Cavaliers. We would be remiss if we didn't mention a couple of other things that have happened in the sports world. We mentioned this yesterday that the NFL owners were meeting at their annual meeting in Atlanta. They were trying to come up with some sort of a solution to the national anthem issue.
They sure did.
So let me just put this in Dale speak instead of their speak. If you feel strongly that you need to make some sort of action or statement on behalf of social causes, we are all for that.
Please do.
However, do it in the locker room where no one will see it, so you didn't actually make a statement on behalf of social causes, right?
If you kneel in the locker room, did you even kneel at all?
Didn't.
Do we even know? Because maybe you're just in the locker room. Maybe you're not ready to go out on the field. And now you
maybe you had to poop or something, Keith, because that's your domain.
No, you were protesting. You're like, no, I wasn't. And so it's just yesterday we were joking about what they thought the ideas could be, and it was, all right, everybody has to stand, and if you kneel, you're going to get penalized. And there could be literally a 15-yard penalty assessed in the game.
They did scrap that part, though.
Unpatriotic-like conduct.
So, yeah, they put that out there, and I don't know how you assess it. I don't know if you do, you know, on the kickoff or what you decide to do. And then there were other ideas kind of put out there that it was going to be up to the home team. They were going to be the ones that everybody's out. But this is all on the home
team.
And we're like, wow, these are two of the dumbest things. And clearly they floated those out there. Everybody shot those down.
So they said, you know what?
Today,
we're going to think about this and get back to you tomorrow.
Yeah, we got something up our sleeve. We're done with it now. So now every player that is out there has to stand. It is now a rule. But they do say, like Dale pointed out, go ahead, feel free to do whatever you want in the locker room. Now, I don't know if that's going to delay start times, if that's going to move the anthem up earlier, because one of the reasons why all the players are out there to begin with is because they do the anthem, and then they're usually kicking that thing off pretty quickly.
Yeah, Malcolm Butler's crying, and
he's
then there's
crying,
a kickoff.
He's crying, we see that, and then game on. But, yeah, this is just the owners. First of all, there's no decision they could make that everybody would like, and they were desperately looking for that, like thinking that that was available. It's not available. And so now they're doing the deflection where
they got trolled by the president of the United
and
States
they
capitulated.
Yeah, yes. See, this is the problem that I have with this, because this whole thing is coming from, you know, a fundamentally manipulative and dishonest place. All you have to do is ask this. Ask the president, our draft-dodging president, who doesn't even know the words to the anthem. Ask him, does he really want them to stop kneeling? The answer is no.
Oh, God, no.
Of course not.
It is.
So
how can
for
he
the flame.
Possibly deflect?
Exactly. Yeah. So this is not real. That's what's so frustrating about this. It would be one thing, like the way the NBA does it. The NBA has a rule. The players abide by that rule. The players are okay with that rule because they have a voice, and the league gives them a voice. And Adam Silver is outspoken, and players are outspoken. And when they had a terrible owner, Donald Sterling, they kicked him out of the league.
Yeah.
Like, you're gone. And so the NBA does it right. The NFL, think about this. These players are kneeling not to protest the anthem, which is what it has been turned into.
Right.
They are kneeling because of, you know, they're protesting police brutality. They're protesting,
the president,
you know, minorities. Yeah. They're protesting the fact that they don't have a voice. And the NFL solution, as Dale rightly noted off the top,
stay in the locker room.
Oh, you can have a voice. Just do it. You know, do it in a cave. Like we don't want to hear it. We don't want to hear you at all. And the whole thing was about these guys not having a voice. Mm-hmm. And you have literally, in your solution, taken their voice away.
And then the other part of it, Dale, is
by the way,
player...
you've already got owners. Just to add to that, you've already got owners. The Jets owner has already said, "Well, we're not going to fine anybody."
Because they said the
we're not
team
gonna find
gets
a player.
Fined. Because now it's the team that gets fined.
But the
and
team
Goodell
has the right
said,
to then
correct.
Fine the player who
how
gets
gutless
fined.
Is that? You, so you put it on the team. So
you
then
put it on the team.
You give every team an out to be like, no, I would never fine anyone.
We wouldn't
for
do
that.
And there are certain teams that know that their teams aren't going to do it, right? Like Robert Kraft, I don't think has to really worry about it. It happened one game, and it was in the direct aftermath of what the president said. Then after that, never happened
It was
again.
Pretty clear that the head coach of the team had a discussion with the players. And they said, okay, and they abided by the rules from that point on.
Yeah, and at least that is a collaborative decision. And you can agree with it or disagree with it, but at least they all came to that understanding together.
So the Players Association is going to fight this. What kind of chances do they have?
None.
Right? Cause it's,
unless there's something
it
in
the
CBA.
It is
the
most toothless, gutless Players Association / union in
great.
The history of sports. What are they going to get done?
Yeah, not
they've
much.
Been rolled in
hey, we
every
don't like
negotiation.
This. Well, we're going to be fine. We're all going to show
we're
up.
Gonna we're going to speak with a firm voice about this.
We're going to craft a sternly worded email.
The problem is, in that league, players don't play long enough to build up any kind of equity. So it's all about
and they're just
what
worried
can I
about
get
now. They're not worried about the young guys.
Exactly. It's like, what can I get and get mine before I'm done?
Yeah.
And, oh, by the way, I might be in a wheelchair in 15 years. But, you know, I just have to get what I can while I can. I can't worry about the flag. I can't worry about this stuff.
Alex Cora mentioned when we talked to him a little while ago that this doesn't happen in baseball. It happened with the one catcher in Oakland who
Bruce
did
Maxwell.
It.
Yeah, who was like a part-time, you know, 4A player.
Yeah, exactly. He's the only one that I know of. If there was another one, I didn't
I
read
think he
about
was it.
And Alex said, you know, he wondered during the playoffs if it was going to happen, and it didn't. You mentioned the NBA. It doesn't happen there.
Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf did it.
Yeah,
and
in 1990,
sat down
whatever.
And people were not having it.
NHL had one guy from the Tampa Bay Lightning who raised his fist during the anthem. One guy.
Yeah.
And that was it. Because, by the way, if he knelt, you wouldn't see
wouldn't
him.
Wouldn't see it.
Yeah, he'd be behind the boards. So he
the raised... NFL's like, we can get behind that. That's perfect.
Let's
we
put boards board. Around. So this is the only sport that this is an issue, and I can't figure out why it's the only sport.
Yeah, well, part of it, I think, is because the NFL has made – a conscious decision to wrap itself in fake patriotism. We have military flyovers. We have, you know, families reunited. Oh, the Department of Defense had to pay for all this stuff.
No, right.
But we make it look
but
organic
you see
and whatever.
It's a part of the show.
And they wrap themselves in that. It's like they're the fifth branch
the
of the military.
But the other sports do, too.
Not to that extent.
But
not
they,
to
they
the
do.
Extent.
The greatest moment at every Bruins home game for me is the so-called, they call it, the eight-spoked salute. And they always honor a member of the military. And they read a biography of this person when they show him or her on the screen. You never hear a word of it because the entire building is standing up and applauding and the players are all tapping their sticks on the boards in front of their benches, both benches. They do it every single game.
Yeah, I would tell you that I had no idea that that existed. So I think a lot of people are probably in the same boat. And also, there's a difference between that and what the NFL does, which is every four commercials is something for the military, something. There are, like we said, there are flyovers, there are salutes, it's just they have wrapped themselves in it almost as a shield to defend their own shield, which is don't criticize us. We're with the troops. We're with the troops. That's the NFL's default position on everything. And so they've contributed to that as well. And when you factor in that you're basically now mandating patriotism. Like, is that what America is?
That is patriotism.
You're mandating. Yeah, it's coerced, forced,
that's
compulsory
exactly what it is,
patriotism.
John.
That's not how it works. That's not how it's supposed
to
work.
I also think
here.
That the NFL was the first to do it. You know, Kaepernick was the first, then other players in that league were the first to do it, and the other leagues were able to see what the backlash was, what the fallout was. And I also, and I mentioned this yesterday, Dale, I think there is, and maybe this isn't unanimous across the board because there are good owners in the NFL, but I think the relationship between the players in, let's say, the NBA and their owners is better overall than that in the NFL. And the relationship with the commissioner is better in the NBA than the NFL. So if the commissioner is saying, look, guys, we really need to do this. I understand how you may feel, but this is what's best for the league. I think they're more likely to say, okay, all right, we'll sign off on this. Give us some other avenues where we can voice our opinion, and we'll sign off on that. Whereas if Roger Goodell goes in there and tells a bunch of players what to do, they're saying, no, thank you. We don't trust you.
I don't think this will happen because I think all the other owners in the NFL are going to be like the Jets owner, who's already said, we're not going to fine our players.
Yeah, you can't imagine if this
does. Well, Michael McCann, the Sports Illustrated sports law guy, wrote about this today. He said the first time an owner gets fined because a player takes a knee and then turns around and fines that player, that's when this thing all blows up. The minute an owner tries to fine a player, because that's what the league has done now. They're saying, oh, no, no, we're not going to do it. And it's on.
What would you have done? What would your solution have been? Because mine, honestly, would just be leave it alone and hope that guys don't do it anymore, hope that sponsors kind of move on, fans move on, and everybody just gets back to football. There's going to be less and less guys doing it, I believe, and just move on. That's what I would have done. We heard all the different examples yesterday. You found out what they ended up doing today. I don't think any of those were the right thing. I would have just said, you know what, it was less and less of a story each week. Yes, every once in a while the president's going to bring it up, but then you just got to ignore it and move on.
Yeah,
that's
because the problem is you can't placate him. You can't satisfy him, and that's what this is all about. This is, we don't want the guy with the biggest Twitter account and the most misspellings in America.
Yeah, but some
coming
of those
out,
are done.
Some
purpose.
Of them are intentional.
Like PFT
we've discovered.
Commenter.
We have discovered he's a less clever PFT commenter. But so the idea that anything is going to placate him, there's no solution to that. I mean, like we said at the beginning, he wants this to happen. He wants this to be an issue. He wants the
Mike
one
Pence
guy
has
to
already
do it.
Today declared victory. Mike Pence, on behalf of the president, has
good. So he can go to a Colts game and he can stay there.
He has now said the president wins. Players are being told they have to stand.
Yeah, because they want this to be a culture war. That's what's so frustrating. So even what we're doing now, and what I'm doing now, and what I feel, you know, I can't help myself when this stuff comes up. I know objectively that this is not helping. This is exactly what everyone wants. They want a culture war. And the NFL is at the forefront of it. And you can't tell me, by the way, that the fact that most of the players we're talking about in this thing, 99.9%, they're black. And when you have a president who's talked about bleep hole countries, and we don't even need to go into all of that, mm-hmm. but this is all part of the race and culture thing.
But the same percentage applies to the NBA.
But the difference is NBA
higher
players,
NBA.
It's a higher percentage, it's a higher percentage in the NBA, but NBA players have a voice already. And going after them doesn't necessarily, you know, you have
no, but
a
when
party
the commissioner,
that's going to capitulate.
But when the commissioner in the NBA says to the players, we need you to stand.
Well, that's been a rule forever.
No, you're going to stand. Why can't the NFL do the same thing?
Because the
you're
trust
gonna
isn't
stand.
There. The trust isn't there like
there.
It is in the NBA.
I don't care about the trust. You stand or you don't play.
Yeah, but that's
the
whole
point. Well, no, if you do that, though,
yeah, but
that's
why it doesn't become a battle royale in the NBA, because there is trust on those two sides. You know, like, if Adam Silver shakes a basketball player's hand, he can probably do the six-part handshake and have it seem real. If Roger Goodell does you're getting a firm handshake, and that's it.
And a big man hug.
Yeah, and a
huge man hug.
Well, and also how, you know, there's a number of players or guys that played with players that got suspended by Goodell or went to court with Goodell or just all, like, there's just a relationship there that is unlike any of the other sports. And so there's no trust, there's no respect even. And so it is just, it's different in these sports. But I think it's also going to be predictable. Week three, let's say, there's going to be, somebody's going to sniff out, oh, like the Patriots only had 40 players on the sideline during the anthem. Maybe not the Patriots,
oh, no,
but another team.
They're going to do a count.
They're
going
to count.
Every
and
team,
then,
every press box, they're going to be going, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 37.
Yes. And then the president is going to still have the same kind of fuel. Be like, you know what the NFL should do is make sure all the players are out there on the
field.
Yeah,
why aren't they? What are they in there?
Thing.
Why aren't
What they, are they doing? They're probably burning the flag in there. And you're
exactly.
like, I don't know if they're doing that.
How do we know they're not burning the flag? Right. Biggest issue ever in the history of sports. Players are they burning flags?
that's predictable. I mean, wait, that's middle of September you're going
to
get that.
Are we to believe, though, that athletes, professional athletes in the other major sports don't have a social conscience? Are we to believe that baseball players don't give a damn?
No, they do, but think
or basketball players
don't basketball
care.
Players do.
Basketball players do. I mean,
the shirts that they would wear during pregame and then
this
they're asked
thing,
about it,
you know,
yeah,
with the fist up, in, the
up
air.
In the air, the coaches, I mean, there's some of the best video about, you know, Greg Popovich talking about the state of the country and Steve Kerr and
Steve
like,
Carr, whose dad was assassinated overseas. I mean, all of this
those
stuff.
Guys Van pregame Gundy. And then that gets put out there in the NBA. They don't try to hide from it. They put that out there and players, they are allowed to speak and do whatever they want to do. So I feel like they have a voice. They don't need to say, we're going to get even more attention by taking a knee and distract from what their point is. They're not doing that.
Yeah, how about LeBron calling Trump, you bum?
Yeah,
I mean, just take after the whole uninviting Steph Curry thing.
Right.
And so he tried this. He tried this with the NBA, with Steph Curry. You know, the Warriors.
You're uninvited. Right.
You're uninvited.
You never were invited.
Yeah.
Like, well, yeah,
just
I was.
Like, you bum. that was LeBron's response.
Yeah.
And so he can't the NBA doesn't engage with him on the level that he wants. And he recognized, because he's good at exploiting this kind of stuff, he recognized that he had a patsy in the NFL and a team in a organization that could be exploited.
Yeah.
Why do the NFL players fall for it?
It's frustrating. I don't know.
It's frustrating. There's more of them.
But they're not stupid. They're as intelligent as the athletes in other sports. Why do they get sucked into it?
I don't know. It's not a very high percentage that does it. But like you said, there's, you know, over 50 guys on every single team. So 32 teams. I mean, that's a lot more players that you have to manage than, say, the NBA or the NHL.
And it's also the biggest sport in the world, or at least in our world. You know,
the
NFL.
States. Oh, yeah,
the NFL
sure.
dominates everything else. So right. that's the other issue. There's a lot more attention put on it, even than the NBA, even than MLB. And so that factors in, too.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.